On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
If you like interviews, this is a little extra show we've built in here. We have some interviews that we've done with some very interesting people, doctors and experts and all kinds of things on four different subjects. That's going to happen right now on this special edition of the Ron Van Dam Show. It's an extra thing. It's an because you've been nice. That's why. Because you've been good.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird. If you like that sort of thing. Whatever.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's a Ron Van Dam special. Couple of interviews for you. I know. Thank you.
Morning, Ron.
How are you today?
Very good. How are you?
I'm great. Dr. Larry Lewis joins us. He's the director of CNA Center for Autonomy and AI, Artificial Intelligence. He's authored studies for the Department of Defense and so many other organizations accordingly. Thanks for being with us. We're talking about the future. Not flying cars, but defense and offense, and apparently what we see in the movies may actually be technologically possible.
So I guess what I would say is definitely this is about the future of war, mm-hmm. for sure. So, you know, war in the future is going to look very different than today. It's going to be faster. It's going to be more complex. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be unpredictable.
Yeah, here's what scares me. Every time we come up with something that is used for destruction, then we put it in the hands of the people that can destroy us as well. And that's always the game, is to have the technology but don't let the others have it, yet they always do acquire it.
You know, that's a good point. And actually, I would say, for this technology, mm-hmm. that's even more true, because in the past, so we're at a tipping point in a number of ways. So, yes. Artificial intelligence is the development is accelerating,
right?
But also, it's not militaries developing this technology; mm-hmm. it's companies like Google and Apple and Baidu.
Really?
So that means that these technologies are going to be available to any country or even any non-state actor.
Wow. What always scared me in the movies was the death ray, where you didn't have to employ people to do this, which is a good thing. It could specifically target things, and there's nothing you can do about it. And that was always a fanciful movie kind of thing. Is that the direction we're going in?
So the death ray is actually very hard. But you're right. I mean, a lot of us we've seen the Terminator movies. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen RoboCop, and so the things that we see there are more than a little scary. But they don't have to be the reality. So you mentioned I'm from CNA's Center for Autonomy and AI.
Yes.
And so we are looking at the future of war, mm-hmm. and some of these technologies and how they can be used effectively, but also responsibly.
Give me some examples of what those may be that we might be familiar with from our movie watching.
So things that you would see in the movies?
Well, yeah, for example, because I guess that's what we can only relate to. is mm-hmm. what we've already sure. seen, and how they actually could yeah. come to fruition.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. So, I mean, I think everyone thinks about the Terminator. We even had, I was working on this issue at the State Department, and we actually had a screening of the latest Terminator movie, and then talked about which parts were true, which not a lot, and then right. which parts were misunderstandings. So certainly we can have weapon systems that do move around and do things.
Right.
What we don't often understand is that, you know, we talk about human control and human judgment.
Yes.
That we would still exercise over these machines. And that's right. something you definitely don't see in a Terminator movie.
Right.
You know, we don't just set things loose and let them do whatever they're going to do.
Right. True. I guess now we could actually commit warfare through artificial intelligence and through sitting in an office somewhere and controlling aircraft and bombers accordingly. Why do we even have human beings in aircraft anymore, to be honest with you? Why is that even necessary?
Yeah, that's a good question. Mm. So first of all, there is a distinction between artificial intelligence
yes.
and the remote piloted
okay.
kinds of things. So yes. like a Predator and a Reaper, you know, UAV, they fly around, but right. there is a person in the cockpit.
Okay.
They just may be at the States.
Yes.
So there's still that element of human control. And I would say there are advantages and disadvantages. So certainly there are advantages to these remotely controlled things because they, when you have more space between, you know, yourself and the combat,
mm-hmm.
you can be a little more dispassionate. And you can also have multiple people watching the screen at the same time, which is also really helpful. At the same time, being removed from the area does have disadvantages too. You can lose situational awareness of what is actually happening,
uh-huh.
and that can lead to mistakes. So there's sort of a balance that you have to manage. Uh-huh.
Can artificial intelligence ever advance to the point where humans would be comfortable with whatever happens accordingly from the artificial intelligence?
So that's really going to depend on the application. There are
right.
some things where AI is very good at right mm. now, and there are some things that, you know, people are talking about maybe AI can do 30 years from now.
Right.
One of the tricky things about AI is that some of the applications of AI, like machine learning,
right.
and how we enter in Google and you can do Google searches and
uh-huh.
then it can look for images and so forth.
Right.
Those kinds of things work miraculously,
yes.
but we also, they're a black box. We don't understand exactly how
yeah.
they work.
Well, the problem is that we apply that now to warfare. And any mistakes, I mean, that's total trust because mistakes can be cataclysmic for both sides.
Mm-hmm.
So we're assuming that mistakes wouldn't occur.
So sometimes we do make that assumption,
right.
but we don't have to.
So
one of the things that, I'm actually working on at
mm-hmm.
the center is,
mm-hmm.
is what I call a safety net. So you build a system, and we often build a system to kind of follow these rules.
Right.
But then, if they break down, then bad things happen.
Right.
For example, self-driving cars.
Yes, exactly.
So self-driving cars. You know, they're still early. Okay,
mm-hmm.
but if you look at, they've driven over a million miles so far,
right.
and if you look at their accident rate, they're five times more likely to be in accidents than
right.
regular cars.
Right.
But they don't cause any of the accidents. The problem is that they are not designed to anticipate problems that come from human drivers behaving unexpectedly.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So those systems may be very safe, but we haven't done the full diligence in designing a safety net.
I suppose,
for
yeah.
how to use them.
But wouldn't there have to be backup systems of backup systems of backup systems? Because I've seen my own desktop fails me sometimes. I mean, so, I mean, just on that level, which I guess is not very technologically advanced, but at the same time, I mean, doesn't that require backup upon backup upon backup upon backup?
Right, and we're redundancy, and it kind of going back to the driving example. You know, you don't have to just follow the rules; you need to be a defensive driver.
Right.
And so, in the same way, you can think about designing these weapons in a defensive driving mode. So, I think that's what you're saying too: is you have to have backups and redundancies, double checks to make sure that things don't go off the rails.
Absolutely. And of course, the ramifications of a artificial intelligence car failure is different than the ramifications of warfare error. It's amazing what you actually do, to be honest with you. How can we get more information about this?
Yeah, so we have a new website because we're a new center. So the website is so we're located at CNA, which is a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. So it's www.cna.org and then /CAAI. Mm-hmm. So that stands for Center for Autonomy and AI. Mm-hmm.
I mean, in essence, AI gets us to other planets, will get us to Mars, have gotten us to the moon, and we're okay with that. And that basically is what happened, was programmed accordingly, and then you let it fly.
Right, so there are some actually really positive things that we can do if we can use these capabilities in warfare.
Yeah.
We just need to be deliberate about it.
Yes, true. And we need people such as yourself to make damn sure that that's the case, so that's good. But it's always good when you're talking about warfare to at least keep some people out of it. Thank you so much for your time. I could talk to you for hours, but I don't think I'm allowed to, so I can't. But thank you so much. Take care, Doctor.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
You want to talk about a guy who's got his mojo working? It's this guy right here, Ron Van Dam. That's why they named the show after him, 100% Mojo.
Editor-in-Chief of Travel Girl Magazine joins us now, Stephanie Oswald. She's an award-winning international person, a travel expert, and we've talked to her so many times, we should have her over for dinner. Hi, Stephanie. How you doing?
I'm doing great, and yes, and it's always nice to join you, and there are so many reasons to take a vacation right now that we have a lot to talk about, because it's been a cold, wet winter for lots of folks, which means many of us want to warm up. So I have some ideas for tropical vacations, beaches closer to home, and travel on the cheap.
Okay, let's talk about the tropical.
All right, well, if you want to help a region that's in recovery mode, this is a great time to head for the Caribbean, because there are some terrific deals to be had, and you need to remember that the hurricanes were devastating to some places, but not all. So do your research. If there's a place in particular that you are determined to head for, go online, make some calls directly to a resort that you're interested in, but travelweekly.com has a great, Travel Weekly is a trade magazine, but they've got a wonderful map online that shows who was affected, who wasn't, and who's in recovery mode. But there are some really wonderful things happening. The Caribbean Tourism Organization named 2018 the Year of Wellness and Rejuvenation. And I think that was a wonderful idea because so many of their destinations are recovering. And there are wellness weeks happening. I mean, some places like the Bahamas they suffered some damages, but they weren't devastated, and they are suffering because of this overall stereotype that people think that the islands were all wiped out. But the reality is places like the Turks and Caicos, Guadeloupe in the French West Indies, the Bahamas, you know, Grenada, Curacao, St. Lucia, there are so many islands that are ready to welcome travelers, and you can find some great deals. Wellness Week is happening at Breezes in the Bahamas. If you want a real splurge, Ron, I know we're always talking about getting you out on that big splurge vacation.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want to go find heaven on earth, Serenity at Coconut Bay is this new adults-only, all-inclusive, It starts out at $1,000 per person per night. Hold on, though. Mm-hmm. There are deals. And if you book a week, you can get 65% off that price. So it still is going to be a splurge, but pretty incredible. Pretty incredible destination.
Yeah.
You get a butler with your little like the Garden of Eden.
I would do that just for the butler. A butler and no kids? Are you kidding me? That's a getaway.
See? Oh, I'm telling you, it's a great idea.
Right.
And you want to head to the Caribbean to help them out right now. But if you do want to find something closer to home, beaches closer to home, you know, one of my favorites, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, they are getting all kinds of accolades for 2018. The Travel Channel named them one of the best East Coast beaches. Coastal Living magazine named Myrtle Beach one of the top 10 beach towns with the highest quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
And then here's one for you. Google announced that Myrtle Beach was the third most searched travel destination in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just, I was just like, wow, that's pretty awesome. So,
wow.
You know, one of the trends we're seeing at Travel Girl Magazine is that millennial families in particular like this destination because it's so family friendly and they've got little ones who are going to be putting their feet in the sand for the very first time.
Mm-hmm.
So they're looking for a beach that has, you know, 60 miles of beautiful coastline, and it's less crowded than some of the other places in Florida or other East Coast destinations.
Well,
so definitely something to check out if you haven't been there yet.
That's
You know, one of the things, just like the Caribbean, there are 14, you know, so many different personalities in one destination. The Grand Strand actually has 14 different communities that make it up. So whether you want to go to a food truck festival or a theater performance or just walk on the beach or go on the sky wheel, you know, there's just always something different to do there.
Do most people say, okay, I want to go somewhere nice to get away. Where can I get a good deal? Or do they say, no, this is a destination I want to go to. What kind of deals are at this destination? What's the best way to play that?
Well, I'll tell you, my recommendation is if you, and we've talked about this, travel bucket list. Everyone should have their own travel bucket list. And because we all have a limit to our time and money. So if there are places that you are dreaming to go to or experiences that you want to, you know that you want to do this before you die, consider combining a bucket list event with your vacation time and get planning. So things like Jazz Fest, Kentucky Derby, Texas Rodeo, make those happen. Go online, do your research, and combine them because getting a deal, and one more tip here I want to give you, if you volunteer, say for Jazz Fest or even something like the Olympics, you can volunteer and save a lot of money on the ticket. You might still have to pay to get yourself there and your accommodation, but you will save some money in not having to pay for your ticket to the event. So those are some options for you, and I know we have to run, but I want to give you some websites.
Go on.
OneCaribbean.org, if you want to check out what's happening in the Caribbean. Visit MyrtleBeach.com for all the things happening there. And then, of course, TravelGirlInc.com to find out everything happening at Travel Girl Magazine. And I love talking with you, Ron, and I hope we'll talk again soon.
Thanks again, Stephanie.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye. Tony Perez is the Vice President of Product Management and security at GoDaddy. And we're talking about cybersecurity, which we should talk about all the time because we're concerned that we don't know what's going on with that. Cybersecurity is you come up with this great idea about an internet and then you have to protect yourself from it. What's up with that?
I don't know, right?
I don't know.
It's
I don't
this
know.
World where... What's that?
I don't know either.
You know, it's a crazy world we live in, right? I mean, we want to be online. We want to be interconnected. We want our lives to be easier, and that's what we do. And then, you know, at the same time, it's a double-edged sword, right? The easier we make it for ourselves, the easier we make it for bad actors to try to do bad things, right?
Yes.
You know, it's the game we play.
Yeah, and we depend on those providers to keep us safe. I know that we can buy certain security systems for our phones and for our desktops, et cetera. But large companies invest a lot of money in keeping their products safe.
Yeah, absolutely. you know, for instance, here at GoDaddy, you know, we not only do we employ a number of security tools and controls to keep our customers' information safe, mm-hmm. but we also try to empower our customers, right? I mean, the biggest thing we're trying to achieve is help people get their ventures online.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just the first step, and we realize that's the first step. And so we actually do a number of other things, not only to help them grow their online ventures, but also to make sure that they do that in a safe and secure manner. We realize how important it is, and we realize that not everybody can keep up with the various security threats that are mm-hmm. going on out there. So we come in, we give them a full solution, and they're like, look, just partner with us, worry about your online venture, and we'll take care of all these online threats that you keep hearing about.
Well, that's good. I mean, sometimes when I see in the address bar this this green secure thing and then it's got the address, I'm wondering, is everything equally secure or does it depend on the abilities of companies like GoDaddy to keep us secure in various manners?
Yeah, so it's a combination, right? I mean, obviously, that's awesome that you actually look up to the browser and look for that green padlock sure. or that green name.
Yeah.
that's a great behavioral thing that I wish everybody would do. But what I want folks to know that that is but one piece, right? That's ensuring that your data in transit is being protected, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to be deploying other tools. It's actually why here at GoDaddy, not only do we provide things like that green bar, but we actually extend that, and we're actually looking to make sure that bad actors can't exploit websites in terms of trying to take, you know, abusing weaknesses. We put a perimeter around the websites. We're also continuously monitoring not just the domain itself, but also looking and seeing, is there any malicious behavior on the website? And the intent there is to inform the website owner, but also ensure that the consumers, as they're going online and interacting with these properties, you know, don't have to worry about being infected, right? And then the last thing is, you know, assume that everything goes wrong. Mm-hmm. Website gets hacked, the green bar didn't work, whatever, mm-hmm. you know, our products allow us to go in and remediate it for the website owner. So again, really kind of taking all that risk off the website owner and allowing us to do that for them so they can continue to run their online venture. And then it's our role in trying to help keep the internet a little bit safer.
Okay. Now, tell me about GoDaddy here. I know that always running promotions, very competitively priced, very good pricing, and it's been around for a while. Where did the name GoDaddy come from? Is that like a beatnik term?
No, actually, if I am correct, this was a conversation between Bob Parsons, the original founder,
yeah.
and Barb. Back in the day,
yeah.
They were having a conversation, and I think it had to do something with like contributions from the family, you know. But that's just, you know, there's a name that he really enjoyed and loved, and he stuck to it. I think the greatest story, I think, for me is how the design came about. And there's a lot of different stories in how this came about for the head,
yeah.
But it was actually a drawing from one of his family members or a family member from one of the team, and he just loved it so much. He's like, I'm going to make that the logo, and out of principle, he made it. I think that's awesome.
That's,
you know,
funny.
What I mean? And
yeah.
that actually goes to speak to kind of what we do here at GoDaddy and yeah. kind of at our culture, what we try to do, which is, hey, look, you know, whatever it is you want to do, whatever you believe your online identity needs to be, we're going to help you do that, right? And you should not be afraid to do that, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I love it.
Well, a lot of providers give you the, you know, you buy a domain name, they give you a website, they help you along, you do it yourself, it's cool, you have total control of it, or they design it, whatever the case may be. But I know GoDaddy goes a step further in helping you promote whatever you're doing.
Yeah, we have a number of different services, right? I mean, you know, it's not just a domain, it's not just a website, but, you know, you go through this ideation phase and you go through this creation phase, but then how do you grow it? How do you get it in front of people?
Yeah.
So over the years, like I said, we've been really kind of like, hey, how do we help you get your online venture on? And that includes, how do we help you do your SEO? How do we help you get your positioning right? How do
yeah.
we help you to ensure that your security is in the right place,
yeah.
right? Those are all critical pieces to having an online presence for your venture. And so we take that very seriously. And every day we sit here and we think, okay, well, what's the missing piece?
Yeah.
What do we need to be doing for our customers?
Mm-hmm.
How do we help them improve? What do we need to add to our portfolio to make them better online?
Yeah.
That's at the core of who we are as a culture.
Very cool. Yeah, it's, yeah, I cybersecurity wise, I mean, man, you know, I think about that every single day, that everything is attackable now because we've put all our information out and now we have to protect everything that we put out there. I remember the days you took out a Yellow Pages ad and you went to sleep and nobody stole your Yellow Pages ad. You know, it wasn't so bad.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, we've got people out there, bad actors, that are always going to try to abuse the system, right?
Sure.
And I don't want people to feel paralyzed by that. Thankfully, there's a lot of good things that we could be doing, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you mentioned one of them earlier, right? It's, hey, I look for the green bar. That's a really good behavioral tactic I want everybody to employ, mm-hmm. right? But there's other habits as well that I want you to think about. I want you to think about things like, hey, your passwords, mm-hmm. for instance, right? Like, you should be creating passwords that are complex, long, and unique. But if that's too complicated, we should be using things like password managers. Allow them to randomly generate our passwords for us so that we don't actually have to think through it, right? So we need to be thinking, okay, in this connected world that we live in, what are the things that we have to do as individuals to change some of our behavioral habits, right? That's going to be inevitable. If you don't change your behavioral habits, somebody's going to abuse it, right? So things like password managers, mm-hmm. things like enabling two-factor authentication, which almost every system out there is making available, mm-hmm. right? You want to make it as hard as possible for the bad actors to try to abuse these systems.
Yeah. It's funny, but as soon as you know somebody's birth date or the name of their dog, you're pretty much into everything.
You're absolutely right, man. Yeah.
That's funny. Okay. Where do we go for more information, as if I didn't know?
So please come on over to GoDaddy.com. Right? And there you'll see a number of our services and what we offer, including website security and how to protect your online identity.
Cool. Hey, great talking to you.
Awesome. Take care, Ron.
Take care, Tony.
This is your source for all the news that matters. Hard-hitting, unbiased, investigative journalism, ready to break...
Sorry, John, that's the wrong copy.
Sorry, what?
Yeah, no, it's not right. Is it under the...
Under the...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's this other sheet. That makes so much more sense. Okay.
Okay, let's go again.
You're listening to a podcast that has Ron Van Dam on it. It's the Ron Van Dam Podcast on New England Broadcasting.
Hi, Ron. How are you?
Hey, Patricia. How are you?
Very well. Thank you. Thank you. I'm fine.
Good. Patricia Schultz joins us now. She's a veteran travel journalist. She's featured on all kinds of television stations and television shows, best-selling author, and she joins us now. We're talking about, March has been designated as National Women's History Month, and only that. Well, I don't know if that's the case, but that's what we're talking about. I guess also about traveling.
Well, I think that we're shining the spotlight on those women adventurers mm-hmm. who are very much part of our history, and we're kind of the first to blaze the trail and make it possible for women over time to travel more and more frequently and to travel independently and to travel to sometimes very unconventional and far-flung places
yes.
in numbers and ways which were not always available to us or encouraged by us.
Yeah. Traveling's difficult for everybody these days, but it's certainly, become a, it doesn't matter if you're man or woman kind of deal. You can go anywhere you want, do anything you want.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, male, female, young, old,
sure.
seasoned, rookie, people in general are traveling. We are, I think, addressing the whole issue of women travelers because it is a rather new notion that women can travel independently. You know, there was a time not so long ago when we needed permission or encouragement, and that's really kind of falling by the wayside. There are new data and new studies by the guided vacation company Trafalgar who highlight mm-hmm. and substantiate what we've always, known, which are that women are traveling more. They're finding it
sure.
makes them bold. It makes them courageous and brave. It provides, it promises, it really guarantees life lessons that you then bring with you, not just on your next trip, but through life. And it has women and everyone understand how they see the world and their place
Absolutely.
In it.
Absolutely.
And how what they would like to do with their lives ultimately.
Right.
It's an enormous education that is invaluable.
Oh, absolutely.
That 4 years back at school just by comparison is almost negligible.
Yeah, when I was younger, I knew people in Brooklyn who had never been to New York City, to Manhattan. I thought, wow, you really don't travel. That's like,
yeah,
that's
and
like
you know,
really
just last week I was in Florida, and there was a wonderful couple saying, oh, you've so encouraged us to travel. They had never been outside the state of Florida. The numbers of Americans who have never left their state, be it, you know, teensy tiny like Delaware or one of the larger Texas sides, the numbers of Americans without passports is always astonishing to me. Yeah. So I'm here to really encourage people, women, young, old, men, families, multi-generation families to travel. The importance of travel it's all important to me. It's really been my life, my inspiration.
It is a mark between two people socially. People who have traveled, not extensively, but have traveled, are more cultured. They think on their feet faster. They're more independent. They understand other people and other cultures and other ways of life like other people cannot. It's necessary for a human being to experience some of that sometimes. And if you don't, you can actually tell a difference that these other people are not as universal. And it's important.
It is very important. And I think it's important to encourage families to bring children. You hear repeatedly, the kids are too young, they won't remember. Well, they do remember, and it does impact them early on, and it does give them a sense, as it does with every traveler, a sense of independence and a sense of resilience. And there's a lot of stuff that travel throws at you that you become very resourceful. You know, you're not hesitant about the language barrier or the cultural barriers. In fact, you embrace them. It becomes something exciting rather than leaving you fearful. You know, the more you don't travel, the more you don't travel, and then you grow kind of complacent about travel. Right. And to have missed out on travel, you know, you wake up and you're 90, are you going to start then? I think not.
Yeah.
So there's really no time like today. The month of March, hopefully, will, you know, with women, really remind us of life is precious, carpe diem, you know, grab the moment and make it happen.
Yeah.
You know, start planning now, start making it happen now.
Sure, and it doesn't have to be expensive either. There are plenty of
good
deals to many places, and you don't have to worry about traveling alone or whether you are a woman or a man traveling alone. Just go do it. You know, you're not the only one doing that.
Exactly. They say the most difficult thing is just getting out the front door.
Yeah.
You know, because you think and you plan and you plan and you think and the months and years go by. Just do it, like you say.
Yeah.
And often, for the longest time, whatever the cheapest airfare was, it didn't almost matter much where it was going to, because there were just so many places that I wanted to see that it was all good. You know, my bucket list was pages and pages long, so where my next departure was for was often determined by the cheapest airfare I could find.
Yeah, well, how do we get more information?
Well, everything you need to know and then some can be found on Trafalgar.com.
Mm-hmm.
I think that while the spotlight in March is on women traveling and women's history, I think that the other 11 months of the year are every bit the appropriate time to travel as well. And if you need to travel in advance into next year, that's fine too.
I think that's okay. Okay. Hey, great talking to you. Thank you so much, Patricia.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Dr. Douglas Robinson joins us now. He's chief gastroenterology at White River Junction Virginia Medical Center. I'm sorry, VA Center, not Virginia. And thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, good morning, Ron. Great to be here. I'm actually up here at the White River Junction VA in Vermont. So
yes, okay.
Getting snow like you guys.
That's where I thought the White River Junction was. Actually, you got a lot more than we did, I think.
We did.
Yes.
We did this time around.
A lot. Okay. Speaking of snow, it has nothing to do with what we're talking about, actually. We're talking about colorectal cancer research, and that is something that at least every man deals with when they get older. You have to start going for testing and such. How important is that?
Yeah, it's extremely important. So colorectal cancer is the second most common cause of cancer death in the United States.
Wow.
And you're right. If you look at any individual age grouping, it's more prevalent in men than in women. But
right.
in truth, women live a little longer than men. And so colorectal cancer and what I want to talk a little bit about what colorectal cancer screening is equally important in men and
yes.
women. And so we recommend looking for colorectal cancer starting at age 50 in average risk adults.
Yeah.
Again, both men and women.
Yeah. Now, how is this dealt with the VA specifically?
Yeah. So the way we do colorectal cancer, looking for colorectal cancer early in the VA is very similar to how it's done across the United States.
Okay.
There's really two common ways that we try to find early colon cancer or maybe even find polyps before they become cancer and try to prevent cancer. That includes colonoscopy, which is this is a test that a lot of people are familiar with, where you prep your colon and
yes.
you go into the doctor and they put this scope in your bottom
Indeed.
Looking for polyps and early cancers.
Yes.
There's also home-based stool testing. So your doctor gives you a kit, and in the privacy of your own bathroom, you sample your stool and then send that kit back to the laboratory where they look for blood in your stool.
Mm-hmm.
And if they find blood in your stool, colonoscopy is recommended. So in the VA, those are the two most commonly used mechanisms. And in the United States, those are the two most commonly used mechanisms to look for colorectal cancer.
Okay.
I think the one difference in the VA is I think those two tests are used a little bit more equally in the VA, whereas outside the VA, I think certainly in some areas of the country, colonoscopy is used more regularly.
Yes. And that's a fairly new development with the home based situation. I don't recall that the last time I even had mine.
Yeah, so there's a lot of developments in colorectal cancer research. Certainly, kind of conventional stool testing, this three-card, this old-fashioned way where you sample three
yep.
stools over 3 days, that was
yep.
kind of an old-fashioned way,
mm-hmm.
a more old-fashioned way of looking for colorectal cancer. Nowadays, we have a number of improvements in home-based stool testing. So you can get away with just a single home-based kit that's actually more sensitive than those older versions of the test.
Really?
And then you may have even seen these tests that combine stool testing for blood with DNA in the stool, and you
yes.
can do that in the privacy of your own home. So
yeah.
there's been a number of developments in terms of looking for colorectal cancer, but you're dead on in terms of colonoscopy is the most common way used for looking for colorectal cancer in the United States.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind the actual test itself. It's actually kind of relaxing for me with what they use to put you out. But it's the prep that kills the human being. And I just wish there was some other thing that could be consumed that wouldn't be so extreme. But I guess there
yeah.
isn't.
Yeah, so you're right. Many people who end up saying, oh, the prep was the worst part.
Yeah.
I think the biggest, it's not a huge improvement, but it's some improvement. We now know that we used to have you drink the whole gallon of stuff
yes.
all at one sitting.
Yes.
We now know that splitting it up, taking some the night before, some on the day of the test, actually makes the prep better.
Oh.
And so that's one improvement in how the prep is applied.
Mm.
And then the other thing I think to mention in this light is, if you really do have options for colorectal cancer screening, so
yeah.
so maybe you'd prefer one of these home-based, stool-based screening modalities.
Yes.
The only thing to remember is if the test is positive, then you need colonoscopy.
Certainly.
So you need to be willing to do colonoscopy at some point to
right.
be screened for colorectal
well,
cancer.
Well, certainly, yes. Well, that would be certainly worth it. Other who would say no? I want to get the disease, please. I mean, that's ridiculous. So yeah
well, no, exactly. I mean,
yeah.
if you're found to have blood in your stool, that should be a major
sure.
motivator. And again,
sure.
it kind of relates to some of the symptoms. I mean, if you're having
yeah.
changes in your bowels, if you're seeing blood in your stool,
yeah.
of course you should talk to your physician. You want to get in there, because finding, even if, again, God forbid you develop colorectal cancer, finding it early as possible makes a huge difference. So
yeah.
the survival for early colorectal cancer is over 90%.
Yes.
So really important to try to find disease early
yeah.
To prevent death
yeah.
from this disease.
I'll tell you a very funny, quick little story. When I was younger, I went to the bathroom, and the toilet was filled with blood after I did a number two. And I freaked out.
Mm.
I just had hemorrhoids is all. that was the whole deal.
Right.
And I learned, like, okay, it's, you know, check it out, but still, it could be that. But that scared the hell out of me.
Yeah, if you're having bleeding, of course, there are benign causes, yeah. But I think the message that you're giving
you
is an important one, which could be hemorrhoids, but you want to make sure that it's not something
Absolutely.
More worrisome.
Absolutely. And everybody should be tested. And the great thing about actually doing the full colonoscopy is that if polyps are discovered, they can be removed at that time, quite amazingly so. So that's, you know, that's nice.
That's a real advantage of colonoscopy. Yeah. So again, there's trade-offs with these different modalities, mm-hmm. but a major advantage of colonoscopy is this idea that you could find polyps, remove it before it develops cancer.
Exactly.
But that's really what this clinical trial that we're doing in the VA is about.
Good.
Because these tests have some trade-offs, mm-hmm. trying to study them in a large number of veterans to see which one works best mm-hmm. is what the confirmed trial is all about.
Doctor, before we leave, let me ask you, do veterans tend to go to the physician more frequently for checkups? Or do they tend to go less than a general population for some reason?
I don't know if I know that answer for sure.
Okay.
What I would say is we do a better job than average of screening
Good.
For colorectal
okay.
cancer,
okay.
And that's partly because the electronic health record
yeah.
has a lot of reminders built into it to do
good.
A whole host of things
good.
That are good for your health. But one of the things is reminding the physician, when you do come see the physician,
yes.
to get screened for colorectal cancer. And so screening rates in the VA are over 80%, which is great.
That's very good.
Generally in the United States, we're somewhere around 65%
well,
or so. And hopefully we can improve that in both
go.
Places.
Where do we go for more information?
Well, to learn about cancer, I think the American Cancer Society mm-hmm. has great information on all cancers, including colon cancer. But if you're interested more in VA research, specifically this confirmed trial that I talked
mm-hmm.
about, www.research.va.gov is a great place to learn about all VA research, including our colorectal cancer research.
Well, Dr. Douglas Robinson, thank you so much for your time. Really good stuff. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me this
okay.
morning, Ron.
Take care. Bye-bye. Well, there you have it for this little interview special. And I'll be with you again on the next show. Until then, I wish you peace. So, yeah. So, here you go.